Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it is a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you, and you get money back in the end. For more information, www.mecu.com, or you can log on to steinershow.org and click on their banner. Last week, we talked for just about a minute about what was going on in Cartagena, where President Obama was talking with Latin American leaders. And one of the things that they talked about very seriously and has been going on is ending the drug wars, that the United States is the largest consumer of what we call illicit, illegal drugs in the world and fuels the trade in Latin America and other places. Should drugs be legalized in America? Should marijuana be legalized? Should they all be legalized? What would be the price of ending a drug war on our society and on Latin American societies? So we're going to tackle this with our two guests this hour. Joining us is Daniel Robello. Daniel Robello is research associate for the Drug Policy Institute. And Dan Morheim is Maryland State Delegate from Baltimore County, a physician, author of the book, new book, The Better End, and one who has sponsored the medical marijuana legislation in the Maryland legislature over the past couple of years. And Dan, I just realized that. Welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Great. Good to be with you, Mark. Dan Morheim here.
Good, Dan Morheim.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Do you go by Dan or Daniel Dan?
I'll be Dan.
Okay, right.
I go by Daniel.
Okay, good. There we go. We got it solved. So the number here is 410-319-8888, whether you're listening to us here in Baltimore, around Maryland, D.C., Pennsylvania, Delaware, across the country on the web. Join us here. Write to us here at steinershow.org, steinershow@gmail.com. And we'll take your questions. You can also log on to our Facebook pages. We already have questions there, both the Mark Steiner Show page and the Mark Steiner page, and we'll get to your questions there. So let me start with you, Daniel. This is really what happened at Cartagena last week and leading up to that conference in Latin America really has set a different tone, because I think that if Washington was prepared and knew it was coming, the rest of the world did not. So talk a bit about that.
Absolutely, Mark. What has emerged is a critical mass of support for opening up the debate about drug policy, about a more effective approach and alternatives to the failure, the dismal failure of drug prohibition, and really to put all options on the table. And all options for the first time include decriminalization, different forms of legal regulation for the various drugs that are currently prohibited, and really all other alternatives. It's an emerging critical mass of Latin American leaders and also civil society groups saying we need to open up this debate to break the taboo about at least talking about alternatives and to put all options on the table.
And I'm going to come back to really look at this conference and what it says and what it says about what's really going on in Latin America, how many people are dying in places like Mexico around this drug war, how that affects America, and what may be the difference here. But Dan, this is a leap from the legislation. What's been brought up in Latin America is a leap from the medical marijuana legislation you've been putting in. Talk to us about it in that context.
Well, the medical marijuana legislation only deals with marijuana, and it attempts to set up a reasonable, accountable, rational regulatory system so that people who need marijuana for medical purposes at least can get it. In the war on drugs, my goal would be to get the sick and the dying off the battlefield. At least we ought to be able to do that. That having been said, it's really part of the larger issue. The way I look at it is after 50 years or more of the war on drugs, with tens of thousands of lives, millions of people incarcerated, billions of dollars, threats to society at every level, it's time to just say the war on drugs has failed. And in fact, Kurt Schmoke and I wrote an article for the Huffington Post. We can look it up.
Yes.
We said time for a new surge in thinking on the war on drugs. We like to have a surge dealing with our wars. It seems to be the popular language. So it's time to rethink it. And I think that's a good place to start. Medical marijuana is just a piece of this, and really should be held separate from the bigger issue of all of drugs, because that really is about helping people immediately. And I think that's really important in Maryland, and it's happened in other states. And
folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. I'd like to hear what you think about the issue of legalization of drugs. Some people have argued that if we legalize marijuana or any other drugs or all other drugs, then it will lead to a greater numbers of people who become addicted or who use drugs. Others have argued that it can be contained. The price of drugs would drop. We would end crime and violence around it. And there are ways that the courts, as an interesting article in the Wall Street Journal this weekend called Rethinking the War on Drugs, posited there are ways that the courts can actually address these issues that can reduce the use of illicit drugs. Now, it's fewer people are using drugs and abuse them or get addicted to them than ones who actually use them and don't get addicted. So, Daniel Robello, talk about how far you think we should take this conversation about, let's start in America first with legalization and then talk about what we do with the war on drugs.
Well, as Dan said, after 40 years, the war on drugs has failed miserably in every respect. Failed to prevent drug use, it's failed to improve the health and lives of people who struggle with drug problems, and it's caused harms of its own that are really too great to quantify. The violence, crime, and corruption that we're witnessing in Mexico and Central America and other parts of Latin America, really caused by a vast and destructive black market. We're calling for at least opening the debate. The different opinions really range the spectrum. People like former president of Mexico, Vicente Fox, think we should legalize everything outright. Our organization, the Drug Policy Alliance, believes let's start with marijuana and let's treat it like alcohol, especially because it is so much objectively less dangerous than alcohol. And that means strict regulations. That means also stepping up prevention and education so that we don't see an increase in use. And let's start there. And 50% of the population, according to the latest Gallup poll, is now in favor of marijuana legalization, with only 46% opposed. So we're seeing a rapidly rising public opinion shift in favor of regulating marijuana.
And that public opinion shift, if you just deal with medical marijuana, is in fact much higher. It's more like 65% in Maryland believe that marijuana ought to be available medically. I think it's an interesting distinction. I'm speaking also as a physician. Besides being a Maryland state legislator, I am the only physician in the Maryland General Assembly. But in the history of medicine, there have been exactly zero deaths from overdoses of marijuana. I mean, we just don't have a very rational strategy here. Tobacco, which has no particular benefit other than to be very addictive and to kill people, is completely legal, restricted to people over the age of 18. Alcohol, which we could discuss its benefits and its problems, is legal. And marijuana, which is certainly much more benign than many drugs that I prescribe regularly in medical practice, it's maintained illegally. And so the benefits of this plant, one plant, is kept separate and distinct from all the other plants that are used to make medicine. And many medicines are plant-based. I could give you a long list from penicillin to digitalis come from plants. But this plant has been segregated off and not dealt with in any sort of rational way. It's certainly not a panacea, but it's not a poison, and it ought to be made available and treated in a rational manner. But we have just forgotten rationality in science when it comes to dealing with marijuana, and that's unfortunate, at least from a medical point of view.
And I would just piggyback on what Dan said. Support, as he mentions, nationwide for medical marijuana is almost at 80%. It's really uniform support. And with
across
alcohol
the political
and tobacco,
spectrum.
We've seen across the political spectrum, absolutely. And we've seen with alcohol and tobacco that through regulation, through prevention, education, and treatment, use rates have gone down dramatically in the last three decades. And it has not been as a result of prohibition.
I'm curious what our listeners think at 410-319-8888. We'll come to the phones here at that number on our Facebook page. We'll go first to the Mark Steiner page. Marilyn Lewis Taylor writes in, I'm not sure about hardcore drugs, but marijuana should definitely be legalized and registered just like alcohol. Marijuana is natural, safe, and has medicinal value. I am 58, happily retired from a $100,000 a year position, and have smoked almost every day since I was 16. People use this excuse that it is a gateway drug. Bull. Anything can be a gateway if the individual is predisposed or has an addictive personality. All the folks busted for weed, ridiculousness, and a waste of tax dollars, too. How many people do we have in jail in America for marijuana right now, Daniel Robello?
Well, we don't know exactly how many people are incarcerated at this moment for marijuana possession or sales. We do know that The nation's police arrest 750,000 people each year for nothing more than low-level marijuana possession. And even if these people do not enter jail or prison, just the scarlet letter that the collateral consequences from a conviction can result in lifelong consequences, a bar to education or financial aid, to getting a job. Even it could result in losing custody of one's children. It's just irrational. And the overwhelming majority of people who are arrested are communities of color, even though use rates are consistent across racial and ethnic lines.
Go ahead, Dan. I heard you about to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're worried about gateway drug, tobacco is a gateway drug, and addicts, heroin addicts, tell me that it's much harder to kick tobacco than it is to kick heroin. Look, it's really time to rethink the whole thing. If there was any other war that was going on this long with this much cost and this little amount of success, we'd have had a change in public policy. But there are deep, you know, vested interests in maintaining the status quo. There are, of course, people who don't think anybody should take any drugs at all, and there's certainly a legitimate point of view for there, but there's so much money involved. And look, I have to say, I'm a Democrat. I supported President Obama early on, and I will vote for him again this next election. But I, of late, have been a little disappointed with the policies that are coming out of the U.S. Attorney General that upended the medical marijuana bill that we just had in the last session. We had bipartisan support for a bill. We had a work group that met and came out with two pieces of legislation, and then Governor O'Malley decided that he wouldn't sign either based on the fact that a letter had gone to the governor of Delaware saying that if they had proceeded with their medical marijuana program, that their state employees could be at risk of arrest by facilitating that. There really was no basis for that, but that's what happened. And it upended our legislation, which was unfortunate because we also heard from quite a few folks who had serious diseases, and we even made a video about it. If you go on YouTube and put in medical marijuana Maryland, you'll see some of these folks who are at risk of being turned into criminals and have diseases like multiple sclerosis and cancer and cerebral palsy, and that's just tragic. There's no excuse for letting those folks be at risk.
One of the interesting things are judges around the country, like then we'll go to the phones here. Stephen, in the article in Wall Street Journal, Stephen Alm from the circuit judge in Honolulu and others around who have started dealing with nonviolent drug dealers and telling them to take the dealing off the street. It might sound absurd for a judge to say, but bringing them to the bars and into homes instead, much like they do in most suburban counties, which is why one of the reasons people don't get arrested in white areas is because the dealing goes on behind closed doors, as opposed to dealing that goes on in poor neighborhoods that are primary communities of color, where it goes on in the street corner and people get busted. I mean, so that is a step before legalization, but I think that one can stretch that argument out, Daniel Rebello, to talk about the madness of trying to come up with these kind of solutions that are like juggling balls in the air.
Well, absolutely. I mean, certainly any alternatives to incarceration are welcome. They're a baby step in the right direction. But with a lot of these emerging court programs, drug courts, for example, we don't really have good data about their outcomes. And there's a distinct risk that people will end up serving more time if they fail to comply with the strict requirements of these programs. They're also not necessarily using the best practices in terms of addiction medicine for those that really do have a drug problem. And then, unfortunately, far too many people go into those programs, take up scarce resources just for a marijuana offense. And so few of those people actually have a problem with marijuana use. Most are recreational users, and we don't need to be wasting our scarce treatment resources on those folks. What we need to use those resources on people that have serious problems.
Let me open the phones here, 410-319-8888. And let's go to Hank in Baltimore. You're on the air.
How are you doing today, Mr. Steiner?
Very well. Hank, how are you doing?
I am blessed, young man. I'm riding around the city, right? You know what my customers are talking about in the car?
What's
that? They're not talking about getting crack. They're not talking about getting heroin. They're talking about Buttes and Percocets and this up and that down, all right? Somebody pointed out to me the other day, right? A person out here selling crack is not selling anything. They're probably making $200-$300 a day, if that. Because everybody's taking over to prescription pills now, right? And I'd like to let y'all know, yes, I do advocate on marijuana, right? I have ADHD, right? I got potential deficit disorder bad. But at least when I'm smoking, I'm calm enough to know what I'm doing, right? And I don't mind letting people know, look, I've been addicted to heroin, cocaine, and all that, right? I've quit cigarettes. And you're right. Cigarettes is one of the hardest things in the world to quit.
It's true.
Right? But marijuana keeps me calm. And you can say and do things to me with marijuana in my system that you wouldn't get away with if I didn't have it. Right? I mean, I'm honestly and truthfully with you. I can shrug a lot of stuff up. Man, you funny. Get out of here with that. Right? And I'm a chemically addicted. I don't mind saying I'm chemically addicted to marijuana. Right? But just think about it. Right? I know what marijuana I'm getting. I've been smoking since the 70s. Right? I run the risk of doing that. I also explain to my kids the risk of doing it. My son, he's 18. He wants to smoke. You graduated. Okay. My son wants to drink. Nah, don't drink, because if you drink, this is the thing. Something happens when you fight and something like that, and young kids fight. You cannot come up out of a drunk stupor, right? You cannot come up out of a nod. You can at least, if you got marijuana in your system, get your fuck your faculties together. And that's it.
Thank you so much, Hank. So I'd like to, we have some comments for Hank, Daniel or Dan?
Yeah, I'll offer this much. One of the challenges with marijuana is that the basic research into this plant has been stymied by the federal government. And I'm certainly not here to advocate what Hank was just doing, but it's clear that there's 64 or more cannabinoids in a marijuana plant. There's different ways that each one works on brain chemistry, and there may be a lot of value that could be much more specific than smoking a green substance you buy on the street from a dealer if we were able to do the proper kinds of research and pharmaceutical work. But this plant has been treated different than all others for no particular reason. Let's remember that opioids all come from plants that are grown overseas. And cocaine, by the way, which we use medically, I'm speaking as a career emergency physician, it's used medically, is also grown overseas in the plant and shipped to factories and then turned into a medicinal product. So there are people that could be helped with a range of diseases, and we ought to have the proper kinds of research done. Until that happens, though, we owe it to the folks who are suffering to be able to let them get relief.
410-319-8888. Lance, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Listen, let's be honest. This has nothing to do with morality, nor has it anything to do with addiction, because we all know alcohol and cigarettes are some of the most addictive drugs that's out there. I mean, I've never saw anyone die from marijuana withdrawal, but yet you can die from alcohol withdrawal. The thing is, this is about control. You know, it opens the gateway for racial profiling. It's an easy bust. I was watching this show not too long ago about young men of color in New York City, where the officers pull them over on a daily and find a joint or anything on them, and it's an easy bust. They take them into the courthouse, and it's a revolving door. It provides jobs for lawyers. It keeps the prisons open. It's big business. And then let me tell you this. There will be so many politicians who would fight this from becoming legal because why? Just like you have lobbyists lobbying for other things, you'll have those cartels. They're lobbying. There's politicians right now that's getting money behind the scenes to keep this thing illegal. There will be too many cartels with money flooding the government trying to stop it. So this thing is about control, it's about big money, has nothing to do with morality nor addiction.
Daniel.
Yeah, well, I'm going to take that one. This is Dan. Yeah, he's exactly right. Like Woodward and Bernstein said in dealing with the Nixon administration, follow the money. If you Google money laundering and drugs, you'll find that almost all the many of the big banks that we know, Bank of America, Wachovia, were involved in major drug laundering for the billions of dollars of the giant cartels.
Let me stop you there.
Most of this has been reported in British newspapers, not in the United States. There's one report in Bloomberg News, which is rather obscure for most of us. So you do have to follow the money. I just want to make one other point,
yeah,
is that addiction drives a huge amount of health care costs for the rest of us. If you want to know why your health care premiums are going up, a large part of it is due to addiction issues.
So I'd like you to go a little deeper into what you just said about the money laundering in banks and the banks you've named, which are huge banks, huge institutions that are involved with we've had in the headlines because of the bailout and the mortgage crisis. Talk a bit about what you're saying there.
Well, Daniel, do you want to take that one?
Sure.
No,
well, we know that this is
We don't know the size of the global drug trade, but it's humongous. Estimates are that $300 to $400 billion, all this money, and marijuana is a big chunk of it, is going to criminal syndicates. And we should be taxing and regulating this. We should be saving money on enforcement and generating new tax revenues. But we're not. But in an era of globalization, of course, these cartels need some way to launder their money. And what we've seen is the financial sector has been complicit. They, you know, deny knowing about it, but as Dan mentioned, those big financial institutions have been, and they've settled actually with the Department of Justice or other federal agencies when they've actually admitted to some degree of culpability. And so with some of the Latin American leaders, they've called for the U.S. to crack down on money laundering, to crack down on the southward flow of arms. But what we really need to do is be addressing the heart of the problem, and that is drug prohibition. And let's just start with regulating marijuana, and we could cut cartel profits by a quarter, by more. The former drug czar John Walters said up to 60% of cartel profits come just from marijuana.
Even Pat Robertson has come out for legalization of marijuana. I mean, talk about the political spectrum on this one.
One of the articles, I think, was it Dan or Daniel who first brought up the banks and the laundering?
Well, the other thing I want to add is, look, you see, it's actually, if you strip away all the issues, it's a gigantic corporate enterprise. Think of product that's grown overseas, goes through an industrial manufacturing process, a distribution system that goes to every street corner in the United States and many other countries of the world, and then the financial part of this, from the dime bag, the $5 and $10 and $15 purchases that are made on the street, funnels all the way back up. It's an economic enterprise of stupendous proportions that would put to shame any other large global business, and it has to deal with security and all kinds of other issues. So it's an amazing economic enterprise, and it does fuel, through the money part, a lot of the maintenance of the prohibition, because there are a lot of people who are making a lot of money.
And let me just to back up what you all were saying, there was an article I just kind of pulled up here from just earlier this month. It was earlier this month, April 2nd, in The Guardian, which is a British newspaper. I'll just read two paragraphs, get our listeners can get a sense why you're calling here at 410-319-8888. Your thoughts about legalization of drugs, what it would mean for our society, why do you think that they should or should not be legalized, and it doesn't have to say with marijuana, we can look at everything else that's around us. I think the addiction and what's going on, and the violent rates, murder rates in our cities, the violent gang rates in our communities, and in Mexico, what do you think should be done? 410-319-8888, we'll go back to Facebook as well. But this Guardian article said, this is one paragraph, during a 22-month investigation by agents of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration, the Internal Revenue Service and others, it emerged that cocaine smugglers had bought the plane, we're talking about a plane in an earlier paragraph, that smuggled 128 cases, five and a half, almost 8 tons of cocaine, valued at over $100 million. It emerged that the cocaine smugglers bought the plane with money they had laundered through one of the nation's biggest banks in the United States, Wachovia, now part of the giant Wells Fargo. Criminal proceedings were brought against Wachovia, though not against any individual, but the case never came to court. In March 2010, Wachovia settled the biggest action brought by U.S. Bank Secrecy Act through the Bank Secrecy Act through U.S. District Court in Miami. So it deferred prosecution. The case has expired, and now the bank is clear.
Actually, I think in one of those cases, Wachovia paid $150 million.
Yes, it's another case.
Roughly a rounding error.
$110 million they did. Right.
That they laundered through. I mean, but this just shows you the extent to which money drives this huge process. I mean, there are many other levels that money does. There are some police agencies that get a certain amount of their operating revenue out of seizures of property related to drug trade, so they continue to be invested. It's a corrupting influence on so many levels. But let's step back from the whole issue. There's something in human beings that likes to change their mood and consciousness. That's just a human factor.
Right.
It's been around since human beings have had consciousness, and there are appropriate ways and less appropriate ways to do that. You can take a walk with your kids or listen to music or meditate, and there's also substances that people take. To some extent, I think it's also important to acknowledge that altering mood is something that people like to do and appreciate it. We just need to make sure they do it in a way that's not destructive to themselves or to others. And there's always going to be a demand for that. And as long as there's that demand, there's a degree. It doesn't mean you're weak or a failure. It's a human condition, and everybody does it. And so we ought to you know, somehow acknowledge that, and that's part of the discussion that needs to take place as we look for new ways to think about how the war on drugs has failed and what are the right terms and the right ways to go forth.
Let's go back to the phones at 410-319-8888. Your thoughts and opinions on legalization of drugs in our society. Should that happen? Should it not happen? How should it be done? What would the effect be in our society? Carrie, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Carrie.
Guest.
Welcome.
You know, everybody has heard this before, I'm going to bet, but why does it doesn't make any sense to me that alcohol should be legal and pot should be illegal? I agree with what your guest was just saying, and I just want to follow on to that by saying that it's a burden on us to enforce laws that I don't think we need. It's a burden on people who get in trouble for doing things that I don't think should be illegal. And I agree with everything he said about attitude adjustment. You can't control people. We've got plenty of alcoholics that'll prove that. And making alcohol illegal only just gave organized crime a chance to make a lot of money and get very strong. And I think we're seeing the same thing now. So, you know, I'm not an expert, and I don't know if this is ever going to become a referendum or a bill, but I would definitely be in favor of legalizing it because I think it places a burden on us to argue about and arrest people for something that's not really that significant. And I'll listen to your comments on the air.
Thank you so much. Daniel Ribello.
Yeah, I mean, I think the caller is dead on right, that it's an illogical policy. I mean, marijuana, 42% of the adult population has tried it at some point in their lives, and now 50% of the nation support its legalization. That was only 35% in support 5 years ago. So we're seeing this rapid shift, and I think there's finally starting to have some movement on this. In Colorado and Washington State, voters in those states will have the opportunity to vote on ballot initiatives to legalize marijuana and regulate it like alcohol come this November.
Look, the other thing is this. I'm not recommending that anybody use any drug, but if you're going to compare alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana, there's no doubt that alcohol and tobacco are vastly more dangerous. I mean, tens of thousands of people are seriously addicted and die from the various diseases caused by alcohol and tobacco. Marijuana is not benign, but if you're going to balance them on the scales, there's no doubt where it tips the dangers in alcohol and tobacco. And I'm speaking from a frontline perspective of a frontline emergency medicine clinician. But a lot of this goes to Washington, D.C. The FDA and the DEA could easily move marijuana from Schedule 1 on its Schedule 5 schedule of drugs, one being completely dangerous and no possible use. That's where marijuana is. It should be moved to at least 2 or 3. Which is at least things that physicians could then prescribe and research could be done. That is different than the whole war on drugs issue, but what I'm interested in is the care of my patients and the people who are suffering now that can't get relief from terrible symptoms. And it would just be very reasonable to move marijuana into a level of the other drugs that are potential dangers, because every drug has it, whether it's aspirin, Tylenol, or Benadryl, which you can buy in a drugstore. And just make it, let the pharmaceutical companies do the research they need and just study it like anything else. And we'll talk to patients about the risk and the benefits and when to use it and when not to use it, as I do with every medicine that I prescribe, whether it's pain medicine or for asthma or diabetes or high blood pressure. I don't know why that's such a difficult concept to get across, but that's what doctors and patients do, and pharmacists and nurses. That's what we do. We talk with patients about treatment plans and what to look for and what not to look for, and there's no reason marijuana can't be in that armamentarium. Just have another tool in the toolbox. When it's appropriate, you use it.
So let me push this a tad further, though. Well, if marijuana, from both your perspectives, should be legalized, then why not other drugs? I mean, if you're really going to put a dent in the drug wars, if you're going to take away imprisonment for mere use of any substance, then why not legalize cocaine or heroin or methamphetamine or any other of the illicit drugs that people use or the hallucinogenics?
Well, let me be clear about my position. I'm advocating for this Dan Moorheim speaking.
Yeah, Dan,
my position
ahead.
Is not the legalization of drugs at this point. My position is the medicalization of marijuana right now that I feel very comfortable with. In terms of all the other drugs, I think we need to begin to have a robust debate about what the best approach is. whether it's legal, I don't know what the right word is even, legalization, ending of prohibition, or some other term. But it's clear that what we're doing isn't working. The rates of addiction are the same or worse than they were when this got started. All the other ravages of the war on drugs clearly are destroying various elements of society and people within it. And I think it's time to rethink it. I'm for the medical use of marijuana today, and the rest, let's have a robust, open, candid, honest discussion about who we are, where we are, and where that should go.
Daniel Rubello?
We'll find ways to go forth from there.
I'm sorry, Dan.
Yeah, no, Dan is dead on right. We need to open up this debate and have an honest public discussion about all of these options. There's no preordained path. But for marijuana, as we've discussed, it's pretty clear that it should be treated like alcohol or tobacco. And we should move incrementally because I think there's less fear and less irrationality around marijuana. And let's start there and see. And when the sky doesn't fall, we can consider other options for other substances. But it's really not an either or. And that too often the debate, especially coming from Washington, is, oh, we can't legalize because then people would be able to purchase drugs in the supermarket like milk. And that's no serious advocate is advocating for that. Instead, we need to consider all the options along the spectrum from prohibition to legalization, a free market, and everything in between. And that includes different forms of medicalization, as is already in place with medical marijuana. Europe and Canada actually have a similar program for prescription heroin, which is administered, and variants of it are administered here in the States in an emergency setting or in a post-surgical setting. But this is actually a program where heroin addicts who have not responded to other treatment in Europe and in Canada can receive pharmaceutical heroin. And we've seen that they're employed, their health is improved, and they can actually create linkages to treatment programs for those that are willing or able to stop using. So there's really a range of different options along the regulatory spectrum, and we should consider them all based on the relative harms of the different drugs.
Well,
and let's start with marijuana because that's the easy one.
Well, before I have a question about that, let me read this email coming in from Clayton Kahn. Clayton writes in, "We also need to consider immigration policy when discussing this debate of the legalization of drugs. Over the past 6 years, Mexico has suffered over 50,000 deaths in this war on drugs. To rid these powerful cartels of their profits from drugs, they will shift their operations more to human smuggling at the borders. Many of the most brutal cartels, such as the Zetas, originally a Mexican military unit organized specifically to confront drug cartels, have begun to take control over the borders, charging over $30,000 per person they smuggle." Now, that is something to think about. These cartels won't go away. They're going to shift.
I think absolutely. But if we take it away from the trying to reduce the flow of drugs and treat it as a security issue and help our allies, help our neighbors in Latin America, we'll have so many more resources to devote to those real legitimate security issues. Immigration is wrapped up in this. The number of criminal deportations has really skyrocketed, and a lot of those are just for low-level drug possession. And nobody should be arrested or incarcerated, much less deported, just for using drugs. And we're seeing Central American and Mexican immigrants unfortunately falling prey to these cartels that were born of drug prohibition and that continue to thrive because of the prohibition of drugs.
Dan Moorheim, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. You mentioned earlier the planes that that drug smugglers use to bring drugs into this country. They also build and use their own submarines, by the way. You know, you think of it, the vast amount of material, the physical weight, how does this all get in the country? And as somebody once said, Al-Qaeda could stick a dirty bomb and deliver it with cocaine for safekeeping. I mean, that's the level of smuggling that's going on. So it's an extremely porous arrangement. And I don't think we're going to solve all the problems here of immigration and all the other issues that relate. But let's at least try and help those who in our own country right now who are suffering and can benefit from medical marijuana. And let's cut down on the antisocial behavior that the addictive world causes in terms of crime and violence and shootings and healthcare costs, hepatitis C, AIDS, all the other things that are rampant in our society. At least we could begin to decompress those problems. Not necessarily solve overnight, it will take time, but at least let's start the discussion of the ramifications of this of the war on drugs. It's clearly not working. Rates of addiction are the same, and crime is worse, and jails are full. Let's have a new set of thoughts on this subject.
Gentlemen, this has been a really good discussion. We're going to come back to this because it needs more light shed on it and a more in-depth discussion. I mean, more in-depth discussions like this one. Dan Moorheim, Maryland State Delegate, physician, author of the book The Better End, be coming on our show to talk about that very soon. Daniel Rabello, who is a research associate for the Drug Policy Institute. His work that he's been writing, the Huffington Post, the places, will be on our website, steinershow.org. So Dan and Danielle, thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark. Been a pleasure. We take a brief break. Then we come back. We're joined by Doc Cheatham and the Reverend Heber Brown as we take a look at the latest things coming up in the Trayvon Martin case and also take a look at the Wertesheim case in Baltimore around Shomrim and the beating of a young African-American teenager in Baltimore City. Stay with us.